Welcome to the weekend in this edition of the Florida Roundtable. I'm Bill Mick. Thank you for spending your time with us here on the Florida News Network. After a harrowing last week or 10 days, political violence in America has become the topic, and I don't guess we're strangers to that as a country. It's been compared to the 1960s or even other times. Got me to thinking, what will we talk about this weekend on the roundtable after such a week? My friend and historian Dave Bowman joins us today. He's with me on my local show each week to talk Dave Does History, and you can find links to that and to the Florida Roundtable, top of the page at BillMick.com. The history of political violence in America in front of us this weekend on the Florida Roundtable from the Florida News Network.
Boating in Florida, it's a year-round deal. But when alcohol is involved, the chances of disaster increase. When you drink and operate a boat, it doesn't just affect you. It affects your friends and the rest of the people around you. It violates Florida law to boat under the influence of alcohol or drugs. But most importantly, it's a risk that can turn a great day into one to forget. To learn more about best practices while boating, visit myfwc.com.
You can depend on Florida farmers. We're your neighbors. Our farm is where we live and work. It's where we raise our families and provide for yours. When you see our logo in the store, you know that our name is on it because we stand behind it. When you shop for Florida-grown fruits and vegetables, look for local. Choose Fresh from Florida, the homegrown brand of Florida farmers.
Do you have an invention idea but don't know what to do next? Call InventHelp today. We have representatives nationwide who will explain the InventHelp process step by step. Over 10,000 patents have been secured through InventHelp's patent referral services. The InventHelp data bank includes thousands of companies who have agreed to review new ideas. We've been helping inventors since 1984. Let's help you next. Get started today.
Call us for free information at 1-800-558-5497. Again, 1-800-558-5497.
Make your garden come alive with Quality Green Specialists. Discover Quality Green's beautiful nursery with thousands of fruit trees, fruiting plants, flowers, herbs, and vegetables. Enjoy an explosion of color and see amazing results in your garden. Quality Green has the very best in organic-based, sustainable products to grow everything super productive, strong, and healthy. Quality Green Specialists, 335 West Michigan Avenue in DeLand. Conveniently open 9 to 4 daily. Online at QualityGreenSpecialists.com.
Nice to have you with us this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. I'm Bill Mick. Joining me this week, Dave Bowman. Just a quick bit of history on Dave. Dave and I met and worked together when I had my show in Modesto, California. He ended up joining the show at some point. And when I left to return to Florida, Dave took over that show. And at some point in between, Dave decided to be smarter than the rest of us and become a historian. So we value his input and glad to have him along. Dave, it's been a tough week in this country, and the slaying of Charlie Kirk, the aftermath of that, folks who do what we do, we've talked about and thought about little else. But political violence is no stranger to these United States. And I wanted to hit the history of that and kind of remind us that we've been through similar things in the past and see where we're going now or what's likely to occur now. Do you have a roundup of some of these things that have gone on historically and how America's handled them?
Political violence in the United States is no abstraction. It has come in the form of anarchist bombings, of course, assassinations, lynchings, riots, government crackdowns, terror campaigns. And it's really across the political spectrum. At times, it's the state itself that inflicts the violence, whether through internment, surveillance, suppression of protests, and sometimes it's the people doing it. In each case, it's not just an event, but it's a force that reshapes our understanding of liberty and particularly the First Amendment. The First Amendment promises freedom of speech, the press, assembly, petition. These guarantees are supposed to create a society where grievances are expressed through words rather than bloodshed. But over and over again, particularly in the 20th century, and that's what we're going to look at, moments of violence will narrow those freedoms. Speech is restricted when it's linked, sometimes tenuously, to unrest, to disorder, and to danger. At the same time, later reflection and judicial correction usually restores and perhaps even expanded the scope of those rights. This is the paradox for us. Violence is both the reason for Americans to curtail free speech, and it's the reason that, of course, will eventually clarify and strengthen it. The question that haunts each generation is simple, but it's unsettled. How far can dissent go before it becomes a threat? Did speech cause violence, or did suppressing speech breed even more of it? The Supreme Court becomes the arena where these questions are tried to be answered anyway, case by case, crisis by case, crisis. From the wartime panic in the First World War of Schenck and Debs, to the Cold War restrictions in Dennis, from the breakthrough of Brandenburg and Tinker in the late century, there are court rulings that create the modern boundaries of free expression and free speech. The arc of the 20th century is pretty clear. Rights narrow in times of war, tentatively expanded then in the 20s and 30s, contract again during the Cold War, and then broadened dramatically, perhaps surprisingly, during the era of civil rights in Vietnam. By the century's end, they have been hardened into strong protection for even offensive or hateful expression. It's violence, whether bombs, riots, or assassinations, which will set the stage, but it's the court that decides which freedoms will survive. The court, of course, has ruled in multiple cases on this issue and has addressed it, and even we've seen, as we're going to see, Supreme Court justices that actually change their own minds about what it means to be a clear and present danger.
It is ahead of us in dealing with the aftermath of this last week or so. And my hope, Dave, is that a look at the history here is going to give us a little bit of a glimpse ahead of what may lie ahead and where we can land. I appreciate the reference to the Supreme Court, because ultimately that's where these battles go. And have we been good about honoring the foundation that was laid for this country? We explore all of that ahead this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. Nice to have you with us here on the Florida News Network. We continue in moments.
Do you have an invention idea but don't know what to do next? Call InventHelp now for free information on how to get started today. InventHelp provides invention services that help everyday inventors get started with their idea. We have representatives nationwide who will explain the InventHelp process step by step. Over 10,000 patents have been secured through InventHelp's patent referral services. Our services include professional materials needed to showcase your invention, and 3D animation and prototype modeling that help you demonstrate your idea. Get down to the details of your idea with a technical drawing. The InventHelp databank includes thousands of companies who have agreed to review new ideas. We've been helping inventors since 1984. Let's help you next. Take advantage of the opportunity to get started today.
Call us for free information at 1-800-577-2648. That's 1-800-577-2648. Again, 1-800-577-2648.
Hello, I'm Hector Elizondo, Emmy Award-winning actor, and I want to talk to you about getting older. My body hurts, my joints ache, and sometimes I forget.
I forget that doing all your own scenes for a movie isn't always the best decision. Especially when you're galloping side saddle down a countryside road on a horse named Archibello, who seems to have only one speed, high. And pulling on his reins only seems to encourage him to go even faster. So, of course, my body hurts and my joints ache, but it's not because of my age. It's because I'm living my life. Oh, Archibello!
Don't let life pass you by. Take care of your brain health. It may just help you stay on top of your game.
As soon as this scene wraps, I'm going to kiss the ground, thank Archibello for his outstanding performance, feed him a carrot, and visit brainhealth.gov.
Find out how you can make the most of your brain as you age at brainhealth.gov.
continuing with historian Dave Bowman here on the Florida News Network with a look at political violence in America through our nation's history. And Dave, you mentioned we're going to kind of limit the focus a little bit. Where are we going to start with this look?
In the early part of the century, we had seen the assassination of William McKinley in 1901 by a confirmed anarchist. To many Americans at the time, radicals are not just loudmouths with pamphlets anymore. Now they'd become killers. The guy that shot McKinley, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name, made it clear that he was just doing it because he was trying to make a political point. And this kind of set the nation on edge a little bit. By the time World War I rolls around, the United States enters the war in 1917 with a mixture of both pride and unease. We want to prove ourselves on the world stage. We want to show the world that we're, you know, the arsenal of democracy and all that. But at home, the United States is very divided. It's divided by class tensions. Remember that in that era, you had a lot of concern about communism and the Bolshevik revolutions. You had these overthrows of governments in Europe that were seen much the way the Adams administration in the late 1790s had seen the French Revolution is coming over here. There were a lot of immigrant communities that were divided about whether or not to support this war or not. There was a significant portion of the country that didn't agree that the Germans were the bad guys. It wasn't clear to them that we needed to be fighting our families over there. There were a lot of political radicals who saw the war as capitalist slaughter. This comes right out of a lot of the French arguments of counter-war protesting. And against this backdrop, political violence already has this foothold. In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, we'd seen anarchist bombings, where people just set off bombs in New York City and Washington, D.C., McKinley's assassination. This had caused Americans to contemplate whether this was legitimate political expression or were, as I said, just loudmouthed with pamphlets. By 1917, the federal government, much as it had done in 1798, decided to treat dissent as a threat. The Espionage Act was passed that year, and it criminalized interference with the draft and banned any speech intended to cause insubordination in the armed forces. And the extent that was willing to go was bizarre. We don't have time to get into it. But a year later, the Sedition Act extended those restrictions to criticism of the government. The United States government passed a law saying that it was against the law to criticize the government.
We thought we left that behind in 1776.
Thought we did. Laws did not target violence directly. They targeted just words. The justification was that in wartime, words could be as dangerous as weapons, and so a leaflet could encourage or could discourage enlistment, a speech could weaken morale, an editorial in a newspaper could spark unrest, and we can't have that. This climate was very tense. In 1919, anarchist bombs exploded in several American cities, including the home of Attorney General Mitchell Palmer. Labor unrest was very common. Strikes were shutting down steel mills, railroads, coal mines. There were race riots across the country in what became known as the Red Summer. Americans were primed to believe that subversive speech and violent actions were two sides of the same coin. It's in this atmosphere that the Supreme Court decided to draw very hard lines against free speech. There were three decisions issued that year, Schenck versus the United States, Debs versus the United States, and Abrams versus the United States. And again, it's I don't want to get too deep into the woods here, but this first case, Schenck, is this idea that the General Secretary of the Socialist Party, Charlie Schenck, was not a bomber or an assassin. His crime was simply handing out leaflets meant to urge men to resist the draft. The leaflets argued that conscription was a form of involuntary servitude and urged peaceful opposition. He was convicted under the Espionage Act, and his appeal went all the way to the Supreme Court, where Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote a unanimous opinion. He acknowledged that the First Amendment protects free speech, but he drew a limit. Quote, the most stringent position of free speech would not protect a man in falsely shouting fire in a theater and causing a panic. Unquote. With that analogy, he gave America the clear and present danger test, which is still in play sometimes today and became the source of a Tom Clancy novel. Speech could be restricted if it imposed a clear and immediate threat to significant government interests, especially in wartime. His conviction was upheld. It made criticism of the wartime policies a crime. And Holmes's argument would become one of the arguments that would be used for many, many years throughout the history of the United States, sometimes correctly, sometimes not correctly.
I find it interesting, Dave, that they were equating speech and violent acts, and we see that happening in the country today, depending on who you're listening to and what they're bringing to the table, is that dissenting speech is seen as violent and also, in the last week, breeding violence.
Yeah, there's an incitement element to it, isn't there?
Yeah.
So it's surprising. The courts were very willing to restrict that speech, and they were willing to put people in jail who said things that the government did not like.
Dangerous territory, or so we would think.
I would certainly think so.
Where's it go from here?
The broader theme is that there's this idea of sabotage is speech as sabotage. These cases that happened in the First World War illustrate how political violence and wartime hysteria combine to narrow free speech rights. The context matters, of course. Anarchist bombings are striking fear. The war effort makes it urgent. Racial unrest made authorities suspicious of radicals and immigrants. The idea of clear and present danger fits the mood. It gives the government the power to silence dissent before it turns into violence. And by the early 1920s, the nation, exhausted by this war, even though we were only in it for less than 2 years, we're exhausted by this war, we're exhausted by this repression. The Palmer raids of 1919 and 1920 swept up thousands of suspected radicals. Many were then just deported without even a trial. Public opinion began to shift with that. Supreme Court, too, decided to reconsider. Holmes would actually change his mind. He would actually dissent in the Abrams case and begin to think to himself, well, maybe we went too far. The seeds of a more expansive view on free speech and violence were being planted. But in the World War I era itself, the message was unmistakable. Political violence and fear of unrest justified a massive contraction of free speech. Dissent was considered to be equal to violent sabotage. The court then endorsed that view, giving the government a very broad license to jail its critics. Now, again, what would the founders have said to that? What would James Madison have said to that? It was an argument that was faced at the time, but you make the argument that, well, we're at war, and that justifies suspending rights. The paradox is visible. Violence had not only silenced voices, but also forced the country to ask, what should free speech mean in our Republican democracy? The answer begins to take decades. It's going to take us a long time to settle this. But that's kind of where it really began, in that firestorm of wartime hysteria, that wartime repression of the ideas of free speech and the ideas of free expression in the face of whether or not they would lead to violence. His analogy about the theater. Are we really going to allow people to yell fire in a theater? Are we really going to allow this kind of speech if we think or if we believe that we know it's going to cause these problems. It's going to cause violence. Is this incitement? Is this, you know, fighting words? Is this whatever? And most of those conditions had not been argued through the courts yet at that point. So really, we're just dealing with, do we think this person is going to cause other people to become violent or not? When you've got the Debs case, when you've got Eugene Debs, who is a socialist, a hardcore socialist, running for president and Congress, he opposed the war as a capitalist venture. He was convicted for criticizing the war and presumably for encouraging other people to do so as well. Supreme Court would uphold his conviction, but they did so on the basis that the words had the natural tendency and reasonable probable effect of obstructing military recruitment and causing violence. It extended that logic, confirming the idea that even indirect encouragement could lead to those things that we didn't want, resisting the government violently, potentially. And of course, with all of this, immigrant issues, with all of the issues they have in the Midwest, with the German population, the German-American population, you begin to see these problems. And as the political violence, presumably caused by socialist Marxist radicals, begins to take home, there's also this fear, Bill. We've just watched the Bolshevik Revolution in what is now the Soviet Union. And we've gotten American forces involved in that. We've sent American troops to Russia to get themselves involved with the Bolshevik Revolution, the Russian Revolution. Should that have happened? Should that not have happened? And the people protesting that, are they becoming violent? Are they becoming a problem? And that's part of the issue that we end up facing in that era. The solution at this point is to just tamp it down, tamp it out, say, nope, we're going to throw you in jail, and that's the end of the discussion. But how does that comport with the First Amendment? How does that comport with the freedom of expression and association? The court's going to have to address that. They're going to have to consider those things, and they're going to have to do it quick because we got a second world war coming up.
And as you've said, it took decades to decide these things. And the question in my mind, is it ever decided? Because the next issue in front of the court could change everything. And we go through those next on the Roundtable.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-340-5510. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-340-5510. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-340-5510.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. Growing up with a brother with autism, Sarah Crump witnessed firsthand how kids with disabilities felt left out by their peers. It's why at the age of 15, Sarah approached her cheerleading coach with an idea to include girls with disabilities on her school's cheer team. Well, what started out as an inclusive high school cheer team in a small town in Iowa has led to what is now known as Sparkle Effect, a thriving nonprofit with over 180 cheer teams across the United States, bringing students with and without disabilities together through cheerleading. The result? More confidence, higher grades, and better school attendance for kids with disabilities. And for those without a disability, new friends and a greater empathy. You want to learn more? Well, visit disabilitycampaign.org, where we have posted a link to the fabulous work known as the Sparkle Effect.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late. We stay informed. We invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united. Stand with us in caring for our veterans.
Imagine. Imagine being denied an apartment because of your religion, or your race, or because you have children, or a disability.
It's so wrong.
Yes, but who has the power to stop this?
You do. Each of us has the power. The law is on your side. It's illegal for landlords to discriminate because of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, disability, or familial status. If you suspect that you have experienced housing discrimination, file a complaint with HUD immediately so we can investigate it. Fair housing is your right.
Use it.
To learn more, visit hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Or call 1-800-669-9777. 1-800-669-9777. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundtable. Bill Mick with historian Dave Bowman as we take a look at political violence in America's history. Dave, you've taken us up through that World War I era and the issues that were placed in front of the Supreme Court because of political violence and huge implications for the First Amendment and the like. Where are we moving now? Where does this take us next?
The First World War leaves deep scars, and these scars linger well into the 1920s. There is a great fear in the country of radicals, immigrants, and the unrest that did not just vanish when the war ended. Everybody kind of thought, well, the war's over, hooray. But none of those problems went away. In fact, it kind of made them deeper because we still had these laws criminalizing this conduct. In the year 1919-1920, we had the first real Red Scare, as we called it, the Red Summer. Anarchist bombs are exploding in several cities. Mobs are attacking labor organizers and immigrants. Attorney General Mitchell Palmer launches raids to round up suspects. He ends up deporting many of them with no due process. And even when the initial hysteria subsides, the suspicion that it creates hangs in the air. The 1920s are not an era of expanding rights for dissenters, but one of really retrenchment. States will end up passing criminal syndicalism laws that make it illegal. The states pass these laws, making it illegal to advocate violent overthrow of the government. The laws were broad and very flexible, allowing authorities to prosecute anyone associated with a radical organization. Labor strikes are treated as dangerous. Black Americans asserting their rights during the New Negro Movement of the Harlem Renaissance face mob violence and lynchings. In practice, the free speech protections were often the weakest for those who needed them the most. And in this environment, we saw the court step in again. Benjamin Gitlow was a socialist. He published the Left Wing Manifesto. He called for strikes and class actions to establish socialism. He was prosecuted by the state of New York under their criminal anarchy law. This gave the court the first opportunity to decide whether the First Amendment limited state as well as federal power. The Supreme Court ultimately ruled against Gitlow, upholding his conviction, but in doing something, they established something very historic. Through the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause, the First Amendment's protections of free speech and press were now applied to the states and corporations. it becomes one of the most important developments in constitutional law throughout our history. The irony is sharp. Gitlow loses his case, but it expands the reach of free speech protections.
Thank him for his sacrifice, even though he didn't get advantage of it.
There you go. At the same time, the court accepted New York's arguments that radical advocacy posed sufficient danger to justify suppression. So he has the freedom to say it, and we can't tell him he can't say it, but we accept your argument that him saying it is violent and you need to treat him as a criminal. 2 years later, the court would hear a case out of California. Charlotte Anita Whitney, who was a California socialite and an activist, had helped organize the Communist Labor Party, and she would be convicted under California's criminal syndicate laws, even though she had personally not advocated for violence. The court unanimously upholds her conviction, and it reinforces the principle that association with a radical organization can be punished regardless of whether the individual had directly engaged in unlawful acts or not. By this logic, membership in an organization, Bill, association, freedom of association, is made dangerous. Justice Louis Brandeis, joined by Justice Holm, filed a concurrence that has since become very influential. He argued that fear of speech alone is not enough to justify its suppression. He wrote that only a serious imminent threat could warrant curtailing expression, and that the remedy for harmful ideas was more speech, not enforced silence. Want to know where I get that? That's where it comes from. Brandeis did not change the outcome for Whitney, but it foreshadowed other cases that would become the standards decades later. His eloquent defense of freedom of speech is essential, as essential to democracy, would become a touchstone for later generations. The 1920s and the 1930s produced a contradiction. On the one hand, the court formally expanded the scope of the First Amendment. On the other hand, it upheld those prosecutions that punished individuals for mere words or associations. The expansion was theoretical. The application was very narrow. The practice was marked by continued repression. Labor activists were jailed. Immigrants were deported. Black speech was violently suppressed through lynchings and race riots. And the promise of the First Amendment was extended to the state courts, but without real protections for anybody who dared to challenge social order. The seeds of a more expansive vision have been planted, but in the 1920s and 30s, fear continues to outweigh freedom, which of course causes more violence. By the time World War II ends, and we could spend a lot of time on violence in World War II, but by the time that ends, we see once again these same fears being renewed. This time, they're again painted red. The Soviet Union emerges as America's rival, and communism is treated not only as a foreign ideology, but as a threat. And the late 40s, 1950s, become an era of loyalty oaths, espionage trials, congressional hearings. And to be suspected of being a communist or even having communist sympathies was to risk losing your job, a reputation, or maybe your livelihood. Political violence would be less visible in bombs and bullets, but it would be more prevalent in purges, blacklists, and prosecutions. In 1940, the federal government passes the Smith Act. It criminalizes advocating the violent overthrow of the federal government, or any government, or organizing groups that did so. By the late 1940s, Communist Party leaders were being prosecuted under it. The Cold War atmosphere framed speech as inseparable from conspiracy. If you speak against the government, you are intending violent overthrow. If you wrote a pamphlet, if you had a meeting, or even a membership card, that's enough to brand you as dangerous and violent. Later on, 11 Communist Party leaders are convicted under the Smith Act for conspiring to teach and advocate the violent overthrow of the government. Now, there's no evidence that they had taken any concrete steps towards this revolution, but they spoke about it and they organized about the idea. The Supreme Court would uphold their convictions, but the reasoning was telling. Justice Vinson would introduce a balancing test. When the gravity of the evil is great enough, the government does not need to wait until the danger is clear and present. The mere possibility of a revolution, given the global Cold War context, was considered sufficient to justify suppression. Now, this is a marked dramatic contraction of American free speech. Advocacy of ideas, even without imminent action, was now punishable. In practice, it meant that the Communist Party could be crippled simply for existing. Now, again, not advocating for the Communist Party, but is that really what we mean by free speech, free expression? By the late 1950s, though, the court began to pull that back. Yates versus United States, the court overturned the convictions of lower-level Communist Party members under the Smith Act, distinguished between advocating abstract ideas and advocating concrete action. Mere teaching or believing in a revolutionary idea is protected speech. Only direct incitement could be then punished. Didn't overturn the Smith Act, at least not entirely, but it did kind of blunt it a little bit. It meant that the government could no longer prosecute individuals merely for reading Marx or discussing revolution in the abstract. It marked the first real crack in Cold War repression. But it was that Cold War, of course, that showed how fear of communism, framed as an existential threat, justified sweeping restrictions on speech. Violence was imagined and seen as a lurking possibility, and words were being treated as conspiracies, at least in embryo. Yates demonstrated that the court was not comfortable leaving that line in place. They didn't like it that vague, so they began to insist on distinguishing between theory and action. That's a modest shift, but it matters. The Cold War reveals both the depth of American fear and the resilience to its constitutional system. Fear produced restrictions, reflection began to undo them, and the lesson was that even in the face of ideological battles, the First Amendment had limits, but it also had defenses.
As you said, this took decades to continue to make the change. It's almost like whittling a chess piece or a figurine. And these violent actions could have been the knife. We continue in moments right here on the Florida News Network. Political violence in America.
Wearing a life jacket or personal flotation device is one of the most important decisions you can make while boating. Today, there are several types of life jackets available, so you can find one that's comfortable and convenient to wear no matter what you're doing. And thanks to incredible advances in inflatable technology and innovative materials development, safety and comfort can both be a priority. Stay safe, stay comfortable, wear it Florida. For more information on this and other safe boating topics, visit myfwc.com.
Hi, I'm Chef Justin Timoneri, Florida's culinary ambassador. If you've enjoyed preparing Fresh from Florida recipes, then you're going to love the Fresh from Florida Club. As a member, you'll be able to search and save delicious recipes, create custom menus, and ask me your cooking questions. Each month, you'll also get a list of what's in season, so you can make your family the freshest meals possible. It's free and easy to sign up. And best of all, you'll be supporting Florida's farmers, ranchers, and fishermen. Join the club at freshfromflorida.com today.
You work hard to provide a better life for your family. The only problem is that you now have a tax bill that you can't afford to pay. The IRS is now threatening to garnish your wages and put a levy on your bank account. You can't ignore the IRS. They won't go away on their own. You need help, and you need it now. Call the Tax Pros at United Tax Fix today. Call 800-762-2768. That's 800-762-2768.
From snorkeling and diving to harvesting stone crabs, lobsters, and scallops, Divers Down Safety on the water is all about visibility and safe distances. There are many options for Divers Down devices. However, the goal is always the same, to be clearly visible from all directions. And while distance regulation should be maintained at all times, boat operators should allow even more when possible. Know the regulations for Divers Down warning devices and keep everyone safe. Brought to you by the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. Visit myfwc.com for more information.
We continue our look at political violence in America here on the Florida Roundtable. Historian Dave Bowman is with us. And Dave, from what I'm hearing, it has not been a recent phenomenon that speech has been labeled as equivalent to violence. And the courts have been dealing with that. And we're up to what? Getting close to the 1960s now, right?
I think that's one of the most important lessons here, is that there is a tendency to blur speech and violence. We've seen this, Bill. We've seen this in the past couple years where we keep talking about silence is violence and speech is violence. We do see those two things as violent. And I don't think you have to go too far to see speech that's being perceived as violence. We've
not necessarily speech that's insightful or anything.
Right, but it certainly has a violent element to it. By the time that the Civil Rights era rolls around and the Vietnam era, it's an interesting time. It was an interesting time to be alive, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
You had civil rights protests that were being met with violence in response. Sometimes that violence was state-sanctioned. Sometimes it wasn't. We had assassinations. We had anti-war unrest. It was really interesting. That's about the best way I can put it. The courts began to look at this and would affirm the right to peaceful protest, particularly, you know, when you have Black student protesters who are protesting for civil rights and are being viciously attacked and charged under laws that make it illegal for them to protest. Well, the courts kind of said, no, you can't tell them that they can't protest, and we're going to put a stop to that. Hopefully that would rein in some of the attacks against them. Later on, you would have symbolic speech enter this. You probably remember the Tinker case, where the students were wearing armbands against the Vietnam War, to protest against the Vietnam War, and the school told them, no, you can't. And the court said, well, it's symbolic speech. But it's Brandenburg in 1969 where the court really establishes this idea that unless the speech is causing imminent lawless action, there's no clear or present danger anymore. We're going to get rid of that. We're going to replace that with this idea of imminent lawless action. If the speech is designed to cause that, then it's restricted. Otherwise, it's probably going to have to be allowed, because we just can't be stomping on speech everywhere. The solution, as Brandeis had said, was better speech and more of it, not restricting it. And yet, we look back at the 60s, Bill, as a very violent time. I was a child, I was a kid. I remember, you know, the fear that was there. And I remember the reaction of adults who were perfectly willing to throw people in jail for disagreeing with them.
Political assassinations, presidential candidates, civil rights activist assassinations, and those counter attempts at assassination, George Wallace. They were there and prevalent. Vietnam was going on and imminent for those of us who were aging into our teen years and wondering if we were going to be drafted. It was a tumultuous time. That's true.
It was a very, very strange. I saw arguments in churches between people who disagree with stuff, and it was really, really odd. But this context of expanding free speech, and the courts were coming out and saying, no, we have to expand free speech. The traditional stoic, you know, mindset that, no, we should restrict that. It was really forcing Americans to come face to face with this idea of, is just saying something violence, or is it the reaction to something that's being said? Is that the violence? And how do we rein this in? That would continue on into the 20th century with, you know, hate groups and abortion clinic violence, militia movements. There's, you know, we could even get into the Blues Brothers and Illinois Nazis. All of these things would force Americans to really look face on to what's going on here. Are we really protecting free speech, or are we you know, just using it as an excuse to silence opposition. And by 1989, when the flag burning case is decided, and Justice Scalia said it well, I think this is despicable, but it's free speech. And I would rather protect the Constitution and the right to freedom of speech than be a king, and I'm not a king. Even that issue has come into play today. Is it causing people to be upset? Is it causing people to be mad? Is it causing violence? You have to face that question.
And as we continue and conclude the roundtable this weekend, what are the implications from violence and these decisions in America's past for what we've seen in recent weeks and where we go tomorrow? All ahead as we wrap up the Florida Roundtable when we continue in moments here on the Florida News Network.
You work hard to provide a better life for your family. The only problem is that you now have a tax bill that you can't afford to pay. The IRS is now threatening to garnish your wages and put a levy on your bank account. You can't ignore the IRS. They won't go away on their own. You need help, and you need it now. Give us a call now, and we'll create a plan of action for you that we guarantee will work. Stop the harassing phone calls. Stop the threatening letters. Stop wage garnishments. Stop any bank levies. And most importantly, put an end to your tax nightmare once and for all. If you have a tax debt of $10,000 or more, call the tax pros at United Tax Fix today. Representatives are standing by to assist you. Call 800-762-2768. That's 800-762-2768. 800-762-2768. Call now.
Wearing a life jacket or personal flotation device is one of the most important decisions you can make while boating. Today, there are several types of life jackets available, so you can find one that's comfortable and convenient to wear no matter what you're doing. And thanks to incredible advances in inflatable technology and innovative materials development, safety and comfort can both be a priority. Stay safe, stay comfortable, wear it Florida. For more information on this and other safe boating topics, visit myfwc.com.
Hi, I'm Chef Justin Timoneri, Florida's culinary ambassador. If you've enjoyed preparing fresh from Florida recipes, then you're going to love the Fresh from Florida Club. As a member, you'll be able to search and save delicious recipes, create custom menus, and ask me your cooking questions. Each month, you'll also get a list of what's in season, so you can make your family the freshest meals possible. It's free and easy to sign up. And best of all, you'll be supporting Florida's farmers, ranchers, and fishermen. Join the club at freshfromflorida.com today.
Shortness of breath, patients confused, temp 102.
He just had an infection. What's going on?
He's becoming septic.
Antibiotics started. Bed ready, let's move him.
Infections can lead to a deadly chain reaction in your body called sepsis. Very quickly, sepsis can cause tissue damage, organ failure, and even death. If you know the risks, can spot the symptoms, and act fast, then you can get ahead of sepsis. Learn more at cdc.gov/sepsis.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestrule.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Thank you for spending your time with us this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. Bill Mick with historian Dave Bowman. And Dave, as we've looked at the history of political violence in the country and court decisions that it's led to and the like, I'm wondering, what can we read out of that history and these court decisions into recent events and where America looks like it's going today? What are the implications for us today?
We celebrate the First Amendment as a triumph of political theory, a product of Enlightenment ideals, carried into our American laws. But the 20th century made it clear that its practical meaning is shaped not in quiet debates, but in the turmoil of violence and fears, bombings, riots, assassinations, state repression, and terror. All of these things forced Americans to decide what speech could survive and what can be silenced. Each era reveals a pattern. Violence leads to backlash. During World War I, we had anarchist bombings, we had wartime hysteria, where we simply equated dissent with sabotage. The 1920s, we expanded the First Amendment protections, but we still convicted people for doing things we thought were violent. The Cold War turns fear of communism into justification for prosecuting entire parties and peoples, while the court then gives the government broad license. Only later does the country realize that ideas and actions are not the same. That's the question that I find myself asking today. Just because somebody posts something on social media or says something out loud, is that the same thing as doing something? In the civil rights era in Vietnam, the courts are confronted with protests, assassinations, an unpopular war. The courts have to reaffirm the rights of students and the rights of protesters and the rights of speech. And they finally replace the clear and present danger idea with this idea that, is that speech going to cause imminent lawless action? That means that radical speech can't be suppressed unless it's directly inciting violence. Out of all that bloodshed and chaos, the amendment grows stronger. By the end of the century, the court had drawn a hard line. Speech is even when it's offensive, hateful, even if it's dangerous sounding, that's not enough. The only outside protection is tied directly to violence. And on paper, those protections have never been stronger. But in practice, violence keeps redrawing the boundaries. And that's what we're seeing today. People are saying things that we don't like. Some people are saying things that they don't like. We are saying things that they don't like. Is that the equivalent of violence? If it is, will the courts have to step in and restrict some of this stuff? I mean, how do you do that when it's online? These are all questions we're going to have to answer. Hopefully not in a violent means, but since we've already blurred that line between speech and violence, I got a feeling that's kind of where it's headed.
It's also seemed to have started an environment of fear, and that's what leads to a lot of these restrictions and the like as well, and conflict continuing between people. Hopefully, we are mature enough as a nation at nearly 250 years old to have learned those lessons and start applying them well. Dave Bowman, it's been a great hour. Thank you for spending time with us here on the Florida Roundtable. I look forward to seeing you next week. We do a Dave Does History every week on my local show, and we'll bring you back to the roundtable when we can. Dave, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Bye.
And we will see you folks next week right here on the Florida News Network. Thanks for making us a part of your weekend.
You've been listening to the Florida Roundtable with Bill Mick on news and public affairs presentation of the Florida News Network. The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this station management, owners, or sponsors. For questions or concerns, contact Florida Roundtable at fnnonline.net.